Welcome back to Starting Nine.
Let's go!
Episode 122. It is, we are approaching, what, 5 weeks left in the regular season now?
Uh-huh.
Time flies. Shut the fuck up, Dallas. Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, time's running out, Jerry. Whoa. Your team's not going to make the playoffs. Whoa. Oh, your team's not going to make the playoffs, Jerry. Oh, did you see my Oakland A's last night, Jerry? We beat the Yankees. Look how easy the Oakland A's made beating the Yankees. Why can't the Red Sox beat the Yankees?
Yeah, so your therapist isn't back from vacation.
I watched. I was impressed. You're doing
all right. Are you all right?
Yeah. Everything is. Yeah. No. It's. All right. It's whatever. It's fine. Everything's good.
I want to make sure. I'm just doing a little. You know.
I get it. I appreciate it. It's just
But how about them A's, Jared? Jesus.
Yeah. They're all right.
Jesus. I didn't want to say anything.
I can't believe Homer Bailey is still getting meaningful
outs. Yeah. Getting outs, Jared.
Yeah.
It appears like before my very eyes, I'm watching Homer Bailey get better right now.
No, I don't think so.
It's crazy. It's this weird thing where he just keeps going out there, keeps getting just a little deeper into the ball game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, didn't have it this time. Five and two thirds, I think. I don't know. It's.
Yeah,
but he's given his team a chance to win. I don't really want to talk about it too much. You know, I'm excited about how they're playing, but there's a lot of ball game left.
Yeah,
there's a lot of ball game left.
Saw that that Oppo Taco by Piscotti last night. That was a fucking pinball.
A seed, an absolute seed. They are. So I gotta say this. I can say this here because I don't know that. I don't know that Soria is an avid Starting Nine listener. Aaron Judge hit a ball two nights ago. And I'm not lying. Like, sometimes they'll play this. They have this little camera that sits right in front of me, right? And I fucking forget that it's there every day. And it records everything I do. Well, Judge hit this ball.
It was like 467 or something like that.
That is not the take-home message. He hit this ball, and mind you, I've got a headset on down on field level, okay? And I'm amongst fans. He hit this ball, and I jolted like I was standing next to somebody shooting skeet and just didn't have my earplugs in and didn't know they were fucking firing. And then I just like kind of slunked down into my seat. And my face was just—it was not a good face that I was making. And the production truck was like, "Hey, you want to take a look at this?" And they were showing me, and it was a genuine, like, as I'm talking to you right now, like somebody walking into my house, I was fucking scared. Like, oh God, what was that? Like, I thought someone was gonna get hurt out in left field. That was a missile, an absolute rod. The best though was his response. To Meredith Marakovitz, New York Yankee beat writer, who asked him after the game, what are your thoughts? And I'm paraphrasing the question here, but what do you think about the ball going out to left field? And his response was, who cares where they go? And she said, well, because that's the first one you've hit to left field. That's the first home run Aaron Judge has hit to left field.
That's crazy. That's
crazy.
Like absolutely insane. Yeah. Like I saw
card game last year in Oakland.
Yeah.
That was the last pulled home run.
That's insane. That is insane. So it got me thinking. And for the folks listening, the minute I thought about this, and I don't know why I didn't apply this, but just watch his warm-up swings. Watch his routine on deck. And you can see that his entire thought process, his entire physical approach is geared towards Oppo. You know, that's his approach. He's geared towards right center. That's where he's trying to make a living. So it was crazy to think that he hit that ball that hard, that far. And that was like, okay, I think now's the first time since, like Jay just said, essentially last year, I'm going to decide to fucking turn on something. But it was a loud noise, boys. It was
loud. It was a loud noise.
It was scary.
Yeah. That was pretty rough. A lot of walk-offs. I don't know if you saw the stat last night. The Texas Rangers walked off three times. It was their third walk-off in their last four games. And the Baltimore Orioles have had three walk-off wins in their last, like, 289 games. It was basically since opening day of, like, they had a walk-off win on opening day last year. So since opening day of last year, the Orioles have walked off three times. The Texas Rangers have walked off three times in their last four games. Also, Max Muncy, shout out Max Muncy, starting nine alumni. One. That's why, you know, like the whole juice balls thing, I get that it's a thing. But some of these home runs, like the Aaron Judge home run, Max Muncy's walk-off home run last night against the Blue Jays, yeah, they're going really far. But with a baseball from like 10 years ago, these are still home runs.
Oh, they're still homers, no doubt. But what's cool is, and as you will soon find out through the interview with our good friend, my very good friend, Meredith Wills, astrophysicist, Dr. Meredith Wills, there is something to the baseball. So when a ball gets hit X hard, it's supposed to go X far. Well, when there are some things that are assisting ball flight, like you can get that anomaly. Like there's, if you have the right recipe, you could, like, that's why we're going to see a 500-foot home run. We're going to see a five. I want to see the 500-foot home run. I want to see.
Shout out Nomar Mazara, who pretty much exclusively hits 500-foot home runs.
Yeah. Like, do we have a home run over 5'10" in the Statcast era? No.
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
Over 5'10"?
I think Mazara has one.
But 5'10", I thought it was like 5'0" something.
The longest home runs of the Statcast era, it's Nomar Mazara and Trevor Story from 2018, tied at 5'05".
Yeah.
Huh.
And Giancarlo has one from 2016 that was 5'04". Everything else is, it looks like, under 500.
Was the one that, I mean, Stanton hit a ball out of Dodger Stadium. I think that was 15.
Yeah, he hit a. Is it? Fuck, it's not Philly. Maybe it's St. Louis. Like far, far, far above Big Mac Land. I'm not sure if it's St. Louis or not, but he hit a ball.
John Carlos was in Coors Field. This one, nope. from 2016.
But Eduardo Perez did a piece on Giancarlo Stanton, and he walked all the way up to a place that Stanton hit the ball, and you look down to where home plate is, and it's just you can't like the camera people are fucking ants.
Yeah, I did that in Miami because
it's just a field for ants.
Yeah, in Miami they mark like all like the home runs like they do outside of like Camden Yards on Utah Street. They do that in Miami too. There was one that went beyond the Budweiser bar out in the left center, and if you stand where they mark the ball and look at home plate, it's like where fucking Pluto is.
I'm gonna need Elon Musk to fire up another rocket to get that ass out there.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Did you happen to see the Nick Castellanos thing where he was?
Sure did.
I mean, sure did. Speaking of being on another planet, Nick sure Castellanos. I wish, because we interviewed him last year. I wish that I knew that he was like this back then, because I just would have went a completely different route and just got.
You
got to
pull it out of him, Jared. You got to pull it out of him.
I mean,
him.
We
That's
did. Like,
Jay Job.
Yeah, we did. I mean, like, it was like I've cited this a million times. The Nick Castellanos interview from last year is one of my favorite interviews ever because it was so loose and it was more of a flowing conversation than an interview. I wish I knew that he was this spaced out thinker type deal. I would have had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, well, he's somebody who, again, like I said, it's obvious that you got to pull it out of him. He's not just going to put it on a tee for you. He's a thinking man, Jared.
He's also probably having fun for the first time in like 3 to 4 years, so he may be more willing to express his positive side currently.
Yeah.
That is always, always, Jay Hay, the deal, because it's one thing to be, you know, spirited and outgoing, there's if you're not good, you're just loud. If you're good, you're colorful, right? Well, if you're not on a good team, you don't really have an opportunity to be colorful, and nobody wants to be loud on a losing team. And so that's a tough spot to be. Well, now, like Jay said, winning ball games, hitting homers, having fun. Well, we can peel back the onion a little bit. Mm-hmm. So that's something we should try to circle back to.
Yeah, I would love to re-sit down with Nick Castellanos and get in that brain of his. Speaking of getting people's brains, though, Dallas, you caught up with Booney.
I did catch up with Aaron Boone.
How did that go?
It was fun. It was fun. You know, we rehashed very, very, very briefly. I really didn't want him to have to go back into the memory bank. I know he's looking forward. So we talked about the success of the team a little bit last year. We kind of ended the conversation right at the wild card game. And then, I mean, he had stuff to do. I talked to him about, the rants. Where are these coming from? Who are you, Aaron Boone? Who are you? It was pretty fun to find out.
Well, did I tell you that I kind of caught him? I don't know if he was talking shit, but I caught him talking about me at batting practice. Reggie Willits? Is he the first? Is he the first base coach of the Yankees?
Reggie Willits.
Yeah, so I was along the first baseline at batting practice, and I'll stay there for the opposing teams. Like, the Red Sox will hit first. I'll check them out, and then whoever comes in, I'll watch a few guys, a few rounds of BP, and then I see Booney is over by the cage, and Willits goes over to him, and then he does one of those like hand over the mouth type mound meeting things. He's doing one of these to Boone, and he's looking at me while he's doing it. And then Boone turns around and also looks at me and then looks back at Willits, and then they're talking. And I was like, I don't know if this is a good conversation or a bad conversation, but I know you're talking about me over there.
You don't know that.
I did. There was no one else standing over there, Dallas. There was nobody else.
You can't confirm that. Who's to say there wasn't somebody that needed assistance of some sort behind you? Like,
there
you gotta understand.
No one around. They don't let anyone in.
There's a lot of people that stare over you that you might think are looking at you. There's a lot of people that are just staring over you.
Yeah, I'd be curious. I'd be curious to know what the tone of that conversation was, Dallas, because says a lot about a man if he can, take criticism or ball busting, or if he can't, because not everyone can take it. So I don't know. Can he take it? Can he not take it? I don't know.
Well, I think just by virtue of sitting down with us, he knew that there was the possibility for it. You know, I did get on him a little bit about his look.
What's up with his look?
Well, if you go back to last year or his first year, you go back to like early on, like there were times where, you know, he had the hat on, high crown, kind of sitting tucked back in the shadows, reminded me a lot of a Joe Torre. And I was telling him, and now I look at you, and I said this on the bus. I said, now I look at you and you are, I feel like you're one set of leggings away from executing a CrossFit discipline right there in the dugout. Like you've got your cutoff hoodie, you know, you got the hat thrown on like you're getting ready to run out there on the field. You got the slight cock upward tilt going, like you got the Booney look going. You're coming into your own. You got the sweet kicks, you know, and so we kind of got into that as well. But it was good to catch up with the skipper of the Yankees.
It was, wasn't it? I bet you guys had a grand old time together. I'd love to have another conversation with him. You know, I think I'd enjoy just, you know, sitting down with a guy and just a couple of guys talking baseball. That's all.
Yeah. I guess if we're going based on what you've experienced, he already knows you, right? Or he knows who you are, or he,
I mean, you saw that conversation in Vegas. I don't remember if I told the story on the podcast. So we're in Vegas for the winter meetings in December. Dallas and I are sitting down to a nice steak dinner, And, I think you were like texting him to see like if he was around, and then he happened to just walk into the fucking restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
So we're kind of like by the entrance of the restaurant. Dallas sees Booney walk in. He gets up to go say hi. And to me, I'm thinking like, all right, like, Dallas is catching up with an old friend. I don't need to be there for that and do my whole shtick. So then they're talking for a while, and I was like, all right, it's been a few minutes. Like, now if it's going to be like a thing where he's over there talking to him forever, now I have to get up and go over there and say hi. So I get up, I walk over, and we had interviewed Boone for, I think it was like a week after he got hired.
Yeah.
So, but it was a phoner. So I didn't know if he remembered me or knew who I was or whatever. So I go up and I introduce myself. Very nice to meet you, Jack Krabs. Nice to meet you. He's like, I know who you are. Like, oh, okay. All right. So I don't
talking that shit.
Yeah. So, I mean, he knows. He knows. I just don't know. I don't know where he stands. I don't know where he stands. I'd love to be able to talk to him. And
he appreciates a baseball mind. So if you were able to tighten up some biases.
Oh, I'm very unbiased. I think I had, what did I have? Fucking, I've had Tonkman as my show him some love. I've had Gio Urshela. I fucking sat down with the man, Gio Urshela, welcomed him into this podcast studio that I'm sitting in right now, and said nothing but positive things. Gio Urshela came up to me and gave me a hug that very same day. After he finished a round of BP, came over, gave me a big old hug, saw Luke Voigt, talked to him, gave him a big old hug. I am very unbiased. And the fact that you would suggest anything but I might use the D word here.
You bring up Luke Voigt. Can I just throw this out there? I tweeted this last night. Mike Ford.
Oh, that was a tank last night.
Mike Ford is the love child of Daniel Vogelbach and Luke Voigt.
Yeah, that was a big boy tank last night.
Yeah, that ball was touched. Ball was touched. They still lost. Ball was hit hard though.
Still lost.
But I couldn't help but look at Mike Ford and think if Luke Voigt, Daniel Vogelbach, boom.
Yeah, that was a big boy tank last night. So what was it, to make it like 6-3 or something like that?
No, 6-2. I think they only scored 2 runs. Maybe they scored 3.
Yeah, something like that.
They didn't score enough. I know that.
They definitely didn't score enough. So at some point, Dallas's interview with Aaron Boone will be coming up. But I got to tell you about New Amsterdam Vodka. New Amsterdam Vodka believes that when you have an uncompromising passion and a competitive spirit, you can achieve great things. This spirit has inspired New Amsterdam to produce a vodka of superb taste and unparalleled smoothness. New Amsterdam distills its vodka 5 times using only the finest quality grains from America's heartland, resulting in a premium vodka with unparalleled smoothness that is then filtered 3 times for a clean, crisp finish. New Amsterdam is slightly sweet on the palate, smooth enough to drink on the rocks, mix with juice and vodka, or make a classic New Amsterdam mule. New Amsterdam vodka is the official vodka of Barstool Sports. Wow. Love that. Play a little pepper here. Carlos Correa to the injured list. I don't like this. I mean, how many times have we said, you know, if the Astros can just get healthy, there's no one stopping them? Well, over the last 2 years, basically since they won the World Series, how many times can we honestly say that they've been completely healthy, that they've had a cohesive, put together, healthy unit? It hasn't been all that often over the last 2 years. And I know the Altuve injury really kind of fucked them last year towards the end. Springer being a guy that's gotten hurt. Yeah, I mean, this is not what you want, having Carlos Correa go. They're in a comfy spot, obviously. You want to get him back to October, but securing home field is still very important in the postseason.
Yeah, and I would ease up on that in a comfy spot talk, friend. I'd ease up on that.
No, they're in a pretty comfy spot.
No,
I think they are actually.
It's not a reality. And when you start to lose guys like this, and I'll say this, with them having just left town, having lost that series here in Oakland, I did take note that Jose Altuve, he didn't look great physically running. He actually got thrown out at home by a country mile. He actually got thrown out at home so far in advance that Josh Vegli went to apply the tag and he wasn't there yet. And then Altuve got there. So either put that on the third base coach, which I'm not inclined to do, or put that on Altuve either way. Didn't look healthy and wasn't swinging it well. I think he had a knock, maybe two, the whole series. I don't know if he had a knock, actually.
In fairness, though, Altuve did come into the series very hot. I'm not going to speak to how he looks, but the stats, he was pretty hot of late entering the series.
Well, things change, Mox.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
Yeah, but this is not good. But again, the Astros are in a nice, comfy position right now.
Can I look at it from a different perspective, or ask you guys about it from a different perspective?
Sure.
Please.
I think Carlos Correa has been a guy that, like, the three of us have viewed, or maybe just myself, but I think all three of us have viewed as like a guy on the cusp of that MVP type breakout season, like that full complete Carlos Correa season that we've been envisioning for a long time. And he's only in his age 24. So this is not like a postscript or anything, but this is now going to be his third straight season where he's missed substantial portions of the Astros season. Mm-hmm. He played 109 games and 110 games in 17 and 18. He's got 72 games played this season. That's 56% of the Astros games to this point. Over the last 3 years, he's played just under 60% of their available games. There's no question that he fucking rocks on a per game basis, right? Per 162 games for his career, he's averaging 30 homers and 110 RBI. Okay, so.
But it takes 2 years to put that together.
Yeah, and listen, he's awesome. Like, I looked up shortstops through their age 24 season by OPS, adjusted OPS in MLB history. The only people he's behind are Rogers Hornsby, Arky Vaughn, Alex Rodriguez, Hanley Ramirez, and Cal Ripken Jr. Okay? So, like, the bat is as promised, but I feel like we're getting to the point where it's like, yo, if he's having nagging semi-chronic issues at age 22 to 24, like, what the hell is 28, 29, and 30 going to look like?
And you also got to remember, there was a lot of talk and conversation around his arm angle, his arm slot, because he is over the top at the shortstop position, and there are a lot of throws that position just doesn't lend itself to an overhand slot. And so you've got to adjust. One thing I'll also note about Correa is this is a strong motherfucker. This is a strong kid. You stand next to him, he fills up space very quickly. And he uses effort. It takes effort for him to get going. He's not like when he's running the bases, you can see there's some rigidity to the body. I mean, he's a great athlete, but I think there's always been, like, those max effort guys tend to be more injury prone. And look, he's dealt with the side injury, right? From the freak massage accident, from the freak gasoline accident. and he's got now, as you said, Jay, nagging back injuries, and he plays a premium position. That's the other thing. Moving Carlos Correa, where would you potentially move him, especially on that team? You know, trust me, you're not going to have to drag Alex Bregman over to shortstop. He'll go play shortstop if you need him to play shortstop. He'd be more than happy to do so, I'm sure. So if it's about trying to limit Correa's movement and stick him at third, like, this is why this raises questions for the future, which is kind of where I think you're going, Jay.
Yeah, and they're not like devastating questions, but just for a guy that we expected to be an MVP, and I think a lot of people expected to be the best player on this Astros team. Sooner than later. Exactly. Has yet to be.
But it's almost like it's been okay. It's been okay because George Springer has been who he's been. Altuve has done what he's done.
I don't think anyone expected Springer to be this good, though.
That's part of my point is that's what's kind of helped or allowed, because look, we have a saying, right? Winning cures everything. Winning covers up mistakes. Winning covers up shortcomings. So George Springer, becoming who he has become, coming into his own, has allowed a Carlos Correa to go through some of these struggles, to experience some of these nagging injuries, if you will. Should George Springer not become the dynamite he is at the top of a lineup, and especially defensively, then you're probably looking at this glass a little differently. Maybe it's not half full.
Jordan Alvarez coming up and being like one of the five best pure bats in the league. Probably doesn't hurt either.
Dude, that is
Bregman being an MVP candidate. If that offense, like, to Jared's original point, I hope we get to see all of those guys in the lineup reasonably healthy at the same time, because that offense is fucking unreal. And they're also young.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's wild. Watching him take BP is a treat.
Like, Springer's not a free agent after this year, is he?
No.
I'll say 2 years.
Yeah. But I mean, like, that's just, it's unfair. Like, especially when you bring up a guy like Jordan Alvarez, who's hitting fucking exclusively second deck tanks, nothing less. It's a joke.
And it's the fashion in which he's doing it. He's patient, Jared. Like, you watch him hit these breaking balls. He's hit some good breaking balls, and it's like he sees it out of the hand, foot down, wham, then we go, dropping head. It's sexual.
I believe George Springer, he had a two-year, $24 million deal that covered last year and this year, and I believe he'll go back. He'll be ARB eligible for one more year and then free agency after 2020.
Got it. That makes sense. But yeah, I think to Jay Hay's point, it's with the whole waiting for Correa thing. I think, I don't know if it was this year or maybe prior to 2018, some of us, I don't remember who, one of us picked Correa to be the MVP in the American League. Like this is the year. Was it you, Dallas?
Yes.
For 18?
It was 18.
For 18.
I think I may have too, honestly, if we go back and check the tapes. I think I might be guilty.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a dumb pick. It's just, I think we're now seeing a trend. He can't stay healthy.
He's going to be, and you know what? He's going to be one of those guys. Well, you hope I hope he doesn't become one of those guys that you just kind of circle the wagon on. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he's that meat sack hanging out in the middle of the ocean, and you're a great white, and it's like, do I go and bite this meat sack that I know I'm not really going to get fulfilled on? People are just going to snap pictures of me. I'll end up naked in a National Geographic somewhere, and that's all that's going to come of this. Or do I want to go fucking munch on that seal? Because I know what that's going to taste like. Like that, and that seal being other MVP candidates that have shown or proven to be healthy. That meat sack, I don't know what that meat sack's going to taste like. I know it looks really fucking good, Carlos Correa. I know it has the potential to taste really fucking good, Carlos Correa. But is it just going to be a meat sack?
Mm. Yeah, not ideal. John Gray has suffered a foot fracture. He will be on the injured list. Foot fracture, I'm not a doctor. Surprise. Dr. Dallas, is this something that we would be able to see him return this year from?
This is actually, and just for the record, my my medical name is, my practicing name is WebMDB. The thing with the feet, friends, is everything we do on a baseball field, everything you do athletically from the ground up. And especially as a pitcher, if you are compromising anything you are doing, that is bad news. And for John Gray, this is the foot that he plants on. Okay. Yeah. That is not good. So you are trying to create a strong front side, a strong front post of sorts, to be able to throw against, to create all the momentum and throw against. Well, if that foot doesn't have the ability to handle that pressure, to take that pressure, now maybe that ankle can start to give a little. Now maybe that knee starts to give a little. Now maybe you're not finishing your pitches because you know that that ankle and you have felt that knee start to give a little, start to ache a little more. Maybe you're sore and now you start to work your way up. And Jared, it's not good because it works its way all the way up that kinetic chain to the arm, to the shoulder, to the elbow, to the what the fuck just happened? My feet, my foot did this. Been there, done that, my friend. Been there, done that.
What a weird. If this is the end of his season, which let's just say it is.
Oh yeah, it is. It is. It's done.
150. So this is a weird year to year. So last year, for the 2018 season, John Gray had a 5.12 ERA. He had a 4.08 WHIP and a 1.34 WHIP. So you look at that and you compare it to this year, the 5.12 ERA drops to 3.84, but the FIP 4.08 to 4.06 and the WHIP 1.34 to 1.35. So I mean, it's almost like the peripheral statistics are almost identical to last year, but his ERA dropped about a run and a half.
Hey, getting big outs in big situations.
Yeah.
Those guys aren't scoring. Yeah. Obviously. That's the difference.
That's kind of what it is. Yeah. He's putting runners on base at about the same exact rate as last year and preventing them from scoring somehow.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know what you would look at, I guess, just off the top of the head, is how many double plays has he induced? How many double plays with men in scoring position, obviously, with, you know. And then you would also have to look at what his inherited runner numbers look like. How many times has he been cashed in? How many times has he left with men on base? What's that bullpen done for him? That's probably a big deal, too. So the bullpen's probably had his back, and he's probably made some big pitches when he needed to.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. Bullpen bailing you out, inherited runners not scoring on you.
Yep, that's the difference between getting fucking cashed out like save mark. Aisle two, earned run. That'll be yours.
Brandon Morrow, Dunzo. The Cubs are shutting it the fuck down on Brandon Morrow for the 2019 season. All right, that's fine. Craig Kimbrel hasn't really been as hit or miss as I feel like Cubs fans are making it out to be. I feel like he's been pretty solid for them. So you lose Brandon Morrow, you gain a Craig Kimbrel. I still think the Cubs are in a pretty good spot. Last night, did you watch that Giants game, Cubs-Giants?
No, I did not.
Sure did.
So that Cubs-Giants game, I don't know if it felt like a turning point to me, but comparable to. It was one of those games where the Cubs very easily could have let that one get away from them. The Giants kept chipping away until they finally were able to tie, take the lead, and the Chris Bryant homer in the eighth inning. A lot of emotion out of a guy like Nick Castellanos rounding the bases. And then you had Craig Kimbrel shut the door in the ninth. I think Cubs are in a good spot. And I'm going to continue to pat myself on the back for this after the trade deadline. I said the player that was traded prior to the deadline that will have the greatest impact on their new team, Nick Castellanos, he has been that. He hit 11 homers in 100 games. 11 homers in 100 games with the Detroit Tigers. He's already hit 8 in the 19 games since being traded to the Cubs. So Brandon Morrow being shut down, not something that's on my list of concerns right now for the Chicago Cubs.
There's always tomorrow.
I got nothing for you.
Okay.
That's where we're at with Brandon Morrow. I think that's appropriate.
Your Brandon Morrow rant.
Yeah. The Tigers have shut down starting nine alumni Casey Mize. Between High A in double A. And by the way, in six starts in high A, he had a 0.88 ERA and 30 strikeouts and 30 and two thirds. But overall, next he gets called up, a 3.20 ERA in double A, and punches out 76 guys in 78 and two thirds innings. A successful first full professional season for Casey Mize. This is a guy that, if you are a Detroit Tigers fan, you're watching what the Tigers have done this year. This is kind of a light at the end of the tunnel. There are some organizations, we don't have to name names, maybe the Orioles, where there's no light at the end of the tunnel. There have been some bad teams that have tanked and just continued to suck after that. But the Detroit Tigers, they've got some light at the end of the tunnel here, and I would say that Casey Mize is one of those guys who's one of the biggest lights at the end of the tunnel for this organization.
Well, that's what you took away from the conversation with him, was he wants to get to the big leagues as soon as possible, but he wants to get to the big leagues and stay in the big leagues. He understands what it's going to take to do so, and as far as his stuff is concerned, I don't think that people really question whether or not that's going to be able to play. It's just a matter of refining it, much like it is for all of these young guys. But the health thing is something I just don't want to see arms like this continue to get babied along the way and have him never be able to, like, maybe fulfill and become that horse of sorts. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't want the, all right, innings limit. And, you know, eventually there was a moment where he could break out, or he could start to extend himself, and that's just never allowed. I would hate for that to happen, but I've been in his exact situation. I was shut down at the beginning of August in 05, and it was just purely because I think I had like 145 innings or something like that between a couple different levels, and it was just time to shut it down. So
shut it the fuck down.
But I was no Casey Mize.
You weren't?
I was not.
Got
it. I was no Casey Mize.
Got it. That, well, you know, it's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Not a 1-1. It's all right.
Yeah. Dallas, I got a question for you.
Maybe I got an answer.
Do you know what the best cardio machine on the planet is?
Yeah, I married her.
Hey, we're talking sex.
Dang.
We talking fucking. yeah, man, I'm going to be real. I'm somebody who likes to be motivated. I like to do things in groups as well, Jared. Having a Peloton kind of checks those boxes for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's why it's the best cardio machine on the planet. It's checking boxes. It's checking heart rates. It's doing everything you want out of your exercise machine. You have the ability to bike the Swiss Alps. You want to act like you're in the Tour de France? Check. You want to bike somewhere along a beach? Check. You want to do it with 100 of your closest friends internationally at 3 in the morning in the comfort of your home? Check. Peloton can make all of that happened. None of that going down in a studio class, folks. You're not touring the Alps in your studio class. You're dealing with grindy traffic on the way there. Maybe your AC breaks down. Now you're sweaty, you're pissed off, and you got to deal with a canceled class. None of that happens with a Peloton right in the comfort of your own home. And it's 4x2. You can damn near hide this thing in your pocket. I mean, not really, but you get the idea. That's how small this thing is. It makes hard work fun. You don't have to be an angry, lazy ass. You can be a happy exerciser. You can be a happy bike rider with Peloton. You get in the zone with your music. That's the bigger thing. This isn't just pedaling away, Carabas, staring at nothing off into the abyss. Nay, nay. Throw in the tunes. Get motivated. They've got a litany of choices. So you just go ahead and hop on that bike, get your mind right, get the tunes going. Peloton is going to take you to Cardio Town. You can get in the zone with a variety of themes, difficulty levels, all kind of training programs for Abbas. You can experience something new every time you sweat. You into sweating? You into new shit? That's what Peloton can do for you, folks. Again, right? You can literally roll out of your bed, roll onto your Peloton, roll through the Swiss Alps, and never even go downstairs before having gotten yourself over the hump. Peloton is offering a limited time offer. You can right now get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and a great cardio workout at home. So go to onepeloton.com and use promo code STARTING to get started. That's right. onepeloton.com and use promo code STARTING to get your $100 off.
Jay, hey.
What's up?
We got to do a little check-in right now.
Okay.
We got to do a little check-in on the awards.
I'm ready.
That are handed out at the end of the major league season. There's one award in particular where I feel like I made a strong stance and both of you took another side and you will prove to be incorrect.
Can't imagine that's correct, but go ahead.
Oh, it is correct.
What's that?
You want to start there?
Wherever that is.
I almost just spit shit everywhere.
The National League Rookie of the Year. Okay. Both of you said that Tatis would pass Alonso by the end of the year, and that just ain't going to happen.
He's hurt. Alonso will be the National League Rookie of the Year.
Christ. Pete Alonso's hitting like sub 200 in the second half.
Right, yeah. Like if that's the whole idea, is if Tatis isn't laid up with his feet in a saddle watching the ball game from home,
then trophy case don't lie. At the end of the year, Pete Alonso is going to be your National League Rookie of the Year, just as I told you many moons ago.
With zero context, no one wants to believe me.
before the season even started, he hadn't even played a game yet. We made predictions. Who's going to be the National League Rookie of the Year? I said Pete Alonso. I was the only one to say Pete Alonso. Praise me, Dallas. Tell me how smart I am when it comes to baseball.
I can't do that for reasons Jay has already touched on, and the simple fact that I told you the guy that he'd be contending with, the guy that would win the award, is out. Pete Alonso has some things going for him, but if Tatis is healthy and continued to perform the way he was performing, in my mind, that it was just a matter of time, because you're going to get excited about the homers from Pete Alonso. But outside of that stuff, you compare Tatis. I don't know. I mean, Jay, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I still think Tatis would have won the award had he continued to play, but he's not playing, so he's not going to win the award.
It's for me, it's that simple.
So in a very literal technical sense, Jared is correct. He took a stand for the guy who is limping to the finish line. congratulations to him. Padres looking towards their future, shutting down their franchise player. I don't have a problem with it. I'm willing to be wrong, quote unquote, for the betterment of Tatis's future.
That's fine. My pick for American League Cy Young.
Hold on.
Longer in the American League.
You're bouncing all over the place.
No, I'm just saying.
That's what he does.
I'm being humble.
Jared's literally running around with the goalposts.
I'm being humble and unbiased by saying that, yeah, I was the smartest person on this podcast as it pertains to the National League Rookie of the Year Award. Mm-hmm. But the American League Cy Young, I got wrong because he's not even in the fucking American League anymore. So let's just start at the top.
All right.
Let's start at the top. The American League MVP, we can all move on from there. That's Mike Trout. I don't think that anyone here is going to disagree with that. I think it's just a factual statement. Don't do that.
It's going to hurt the credibility of the podcast.
Yeah, people. I was
going to say, I'll say this because obviously we are all in complete and total agreement here. Is there anybody you could even just tickle the balls on?
No. I think this might be the most lopsided vote in quite some time. I think it's gotten to the point where even the people who are going to criticize Trout for not being on a playoff team can't even credibly make a case for somebody else.
Okay, you could make a case for Rafael Devers.
No.
Well, this is why
he's not even clearly the best player on his own team.
Yeah, see? That's all you got to do, folks, is post
total bases, doubles, RBIs, extra base hits. He leads the majors in all of those categories. Like, you could make a case.
No, it would be a pathetic, sad argument.
In a world where Mike Trout didn't exist, Rafael Devers 1,000% would be a strong candidate for the MVP. So we're just discussing.
So in an alternate reality, you could make a reasonable argument. And even then, it wouldn't necessarily be.
There's no case to be made for anyone other than Mike Trout. I'm saying if Mike Trout didn't exist, Rafael Devers would make a very, very strong case.
So MLB tweeted out the writers did a straw poll recently on all the awards as they do like once a month or so. And I think the top three for the AL was Trout, Bregman, Devers. And as you would expect, the Yankee chorus was, basically, where's LeMahieu? Which is just like, it's entirely predictable. Yeah. But it's not even close.
That's why I asked, could you tickle the balls? Could you tickle the balls on Alex Bregman?
No.
And the only reason, hey, you guys.
Was that my preseason pick? We need to go back and find.
Trust me, if we were able to go back and find all of the shit that we have talked
about. Here's what we're going to do.
What?
When we do the awards podcast, okay?
Yeah, we need to cut in predictions.
We are going to, before we get to the actual picks for this year, we're going to splice in the dumb and idiotic things that we said back in March or whatever, March, whenever we did it.
That's why we need someone keeping track of all the dumb shit we say on these things, is so that there's like a, you know, like.
Yeah, that's easy to find.
Okay. All right.
That's easy to find.
All right. So let me just make this final point, or just let you know why I even asked about the tickling. All right. The war number, think about those that separate one and two. Uh-huh. And then
big
we'll obviously be having this discussion in the National League.
Yeah. One note on Trout: he's on pace for his fourth 10-win season per Baseball Reference. Assuming he does accomplish that, the only players in baseball history who will have had more such seasons are Babe Ruth, Willie Mays, and Rogers Hornsby. He will officially, with many more seasons presumably left in his career, he will have passed Bonds, Mantle, Williams, and Cobb for those such seasons.
Babe Ruth sucks.
Well,
like, we all just need to call a spade here.
Watch your fucking mouth.
NL MVP. So you feels like Dallas has got something to say here.
Oh, no. I was just the NL MVP it's Yelly or Belly. Is it not? It's Yelly or Belly. They are literally 1-2 in WAR, O-WAR, OBP, slug, OPS, obviously, total bases, homers, batting wins plus adjusted batting wins. So the total value of a player to their team via his bat specifically. Extra base hits. They're tied with Josh Bell, I believe. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Yelly is. I honestly think that Yelly winning it last year is playing against him this year. Not to mention, I think Cody Bellinger is just. I think it's been a level of sustained production on a different level.
Yeah,
just a tick higher, if you will.
Just having a better year. It's okay.
Yeah.
Same thing as like, you know, when we get to the NL Cy Young talk, it's kind of the same deal. Just because Bellinger's having a better year doesn't mean that Yelich isn't having an MVP caliber season. I don't think it takes away from anything that he's done this year. He's having a fucking phenomenal season. He's having an MVP caliber season. It just happens to be that Bellinger's having a slightly better season.
Yeah, it's just real. I think it's also awesome that it is two young guys that are going to be and hopefully going to be around this game for a long time. These, like, I could see a Yelly and Belly kind of like just this continued battle over the course of, you know, many years, taking MVPs away from each other, taking batting titles away from each other.
Before we move on from the NL MVP, I feel like the narrative, the tide is turned towards Ronald Acuna as the default third option. And yes. I just wanted to throw this out into the world. I'm just not quite sure when he passed Anthony Rendon in this pecking order, because nothing really about Rendon's season has slowed down. He would be the first third baseman since Miggy in 2013 to slash 400, 600, 400 on base percentage, 600 slugging. He'd be the first NL third baseman to do so since Chipper in 2007. And the only other Nationals Expos players to ever do that, Harper in his MVP campaign in 2015 and Vlad in 2000. I get why Acuna is appealing and that his team leads the division. I just don't. Anthony Rendon has been that third guy the entire season, and I just don't see how he's been displaced yet.
Because as red-blooded Americans, Jay Hay, we are enamored with sexy numbers and sexy records, and just 40-40 gets the blood flowing just a little bit. So you start to have those conversations, and now you're like, well, how's a 40-40 guy not an MVP candidate? Like, how does that happen? And that's where the conversation goes. There is a statistic that Ronald Acuna, I believe, leads. I would have to look this up. I'm trying to look it up as I talk to you guys right now. It's the run power index number, right? And that's taking home runs and stolen bases and multiplying them, and then taking home runs and stolen bases and adding them, and then dividing that number. Or multiplying that number by two and then dividing it. And like Acuna's run power index is greater than I think anybody in the NL, if I remember correctly. I was looking at that a couple days ago. But the power speed combination is something that's attractive.
Sure.
And that's why Christian Yelich is like for him to hit the ball the way he has for power and to steal bags and create run scoring opportunities. That's a fun brand of baseball to watch be played.
Yeah. What do you think is more likely, 40-40 or 50-30?
50-30. Because what's he at now, 41?
He's got 36 homers and...
Who?
Acuna.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Yelly.
Yeah, he's got 36 homers and 28 bags, maybe. He got thrown out trying to steal last night.
I don't think either one's happening.
Yeah, he's not going to get to 50.
Nope.
I don't see Acuna getting to 50. No, And honestly, I think he'll probably end up somewhere around like 33 bags, 34 back. Like just because, like I said, the opportunities are going to be aren't as abundant as one might think down the stretch. How many times is he going to hit the ball and end up on second? How many times is he going to end up just making three left turns? And for the game situation to dictate him needing to take second base, you know, gambling with that out, we all know what the odds are. We all know what it looks like. They tell you that's not good. We're not just here to give away an out. So I don't know that 40 is a realistic number, but it's sexy, and that's what gets the conversation going.
Yeah. Next.
AL Cy Young.
The American League Cy Young Award winner. It's crazy that he doesn't have more. And if the writers fuck him again, I swear to God. And if he does get fucked, it'll only be to his own teammate. Like that's kind of like my, I guess they could take votes away from each other, and it could be like this weird situation, like in 2016, where like Rick Porcello won with like the most second place votes or some shit. But it should be Justin Verlander. Last night, he struck out at least 10 batters for the seventh consecutive start. I don't know what the statistic was, but it's like five guys.
It was a record. It was a Houston Astros record that he broke against Oakland.
Yeah.
Yes. So the stat is seven or more straight starts with 10 plus Ks.
the only people who have done that, Nolan Ryan, Randy, Pedro, and Sale. And the only people, if he does it one more, the only people who have done it eight times, Chris Sale twice, two separate streaks, and Pedro Martinez once. It's crazy. He's pitching at a very high level. Although I will say Gerrit Cole, over his last 14 starts, 10-0, 1.98 ERA, 126 strikeouts over 91 innings. I don't think this would be highway robbery if Gerrit Cole won the award.
I don't think so either.
It would just be shitty because Verlander has been, I don't want to say been fucked, but he's kind of been fucked.
No, he's been fucked. No, he's been fucked. He got fucked in 16.
What is that? What is that, Jay Hay? What is that?
He got an MVP that he probably shouldn't have gotten.
I bet you he would gladly give back that MVP to win the Cy Young in 16.
No. Easy, bud.
I think he would.
That MVP is a feather in a pitcher's cap more so than, look, because the Cy Young, that's our award. That's right. For us. That's for us. Like, but you, I don't care how many fucking furious. Home runs you hit. I don't care how many home runs you hit. I don't care what your batting average is. You can go ahead and win the Triple Crown, Miguel Cabrera. You can go ahead and set the world on fire, Mike Trout. Guess what? You will not ever receive one single vote for in your entire career. A Cy Young. Guess who just took your award from you? The guy who works every 5 days. You couldn't beat a guy out who only works every fifth day. So as a pitcher, that's just a huge double rockets to the rest of the fucking playing world. Fuck you! I'm so good that what I do every 5 days was worth way more than what you do every day, maybe next year.
I don't know. I can't, obviously can't speak for Justin Verlander, but if I were a pitcher, I would want more awards for separate seasons than I would rather have a Cy Young in two seasons than a Cy Young and an MVP in one season.
Yeah. See, like for me, no, no. Like I was so like, that's another level of dominance. That's what I'm saying is, you were so dominant.
But not when everyone is saying that he shouldn't have won it. Like, I know it doesn't take the trophy off of his trophy case, but...
Sure doesn't. And all the people that mattered are the ones who made this so. So, court of public opinion, that's cute too. Yeah. That's awesome.
I would rather have all got one of those. If I were a starting pitcher and I had the option, take your pick, you can have two Cy Young awards or a Cy Young and an MVP in the same season, I would probably take the two Cy Young awards because it's just, I mean, he should have one for 2016. And I don't know how the voting's going to turn out this year, but I strongly believe that Justin Verlander should be the Cy Young award winner in the American League this year as well.
And now Cy Young, two things I want to note. Ryu, two podcasts ago, we talked about his pursuit of like the lowest ERA since type stuff. His only start since then, 5 2/3, 4 earned. So his ERA went from 1.45 to 1.64. That is a devastating blow to any attempt at certainly Bob Gibson's record.
No chance.
But here's a stat I dug up. So I think we're all on the same page that it's probably Ryu's award right now, with the caveat that Max Scherzer could build a case if he comes back healthy over the last month. Come on.
I'm on the Mad Max train. Let's go this last month.
Let me bring up a guy who's not going to win, but who is having another insane season, which is Jacob DeGrom. Okay.
Oh God.
Baseball starts. This is nut. No. I'm going in a different direction here. This is nutty to me. Last year was his age 30. This is his age 31 season. Okay. Per Baseball Reference, he's accumulated 14.7 wins above replacement across that span. The only right-handed pitcher since the game was integrated to have a better age 30 to 31 stretch is Greg Maddux from 1996 to 1997. That is the only pitcher from 30 to 31 to be better than DeGrom has over that same stretch. He just edges out, Per Baseball Reference, Pedro's 02 to 03 seasons, David Cone, 93 to 94, Gaylord Perry, 69 to 70. Those are the top five. That's how good Jacob DeGrom is, and he may not get a single first-place vote for the NL Cy Young this year.
Nor should he.
Tough tickets.
Perhaps.
Tough tickets.
I mean, he's not He's not the best pitcher in the National League. He's not the second best pitcher in the National League.
No, but I don't think the conversation is necessarily over in that regard. I think there's a scenario where this could still be Jacob DeGrom's award.
Really? Well, I mean, I would have him as the third best pitcher in the National League.
I agree. And I think if Scherzer does not build the case that we're talking about and Ryu falls off, I think there's a way that DeGrom almost defaults into the award. I don't think it's likely, but if Ryu has three or four bad starts and his ERA gets up to like 2-3, he's not winning.
I would give it to Scherzer. I mean, is it weird for me to say that even right now I'm considering Scherzer?
Yeah, I don't think it's weird.
No, I'm telling you, because look, this dude comes back and is just a fucking beast. He's going to leave you with that fresh taste of dominance in your mouth. Mm. That's going to be
God, I love what fresh you dominance in my mouth.
Oh, fucking double fisted dominance right to the dome. That's what, and like you go to the dominant statistics, and that's where that, you know. That's where old Maxi Babe's gonna rule. The K's per nine. The one thing that he's not going to be in the conversation for. Well, I don't know. Maybe what's the workload for old Maxi Babe? He's not gonna be anywhere close to like an innings number. Yeah.
No, but he still could be on an innings level with Ryu. Here's my take with this.
Sure. Neither one of them are even at 150 innings, are they?
I think Ryu's ERA has to be below 2 to win the award.
Because of the limited body of work.
Yeah, I just think like that's how the vote's going to work. Like if he doesn't have that clear cut, like sub 2 sexy ERA, right. I think he leaves himself.
Because well, you know, as of right now, Ryu sits first in, I believe, whip, walks per 9, ERA.
It's his right now.
Yeah, and he's first in a ton of the advanced adjusted stats as well per baseball reference. But yeah, I think that's why I think Max Scherzer could definitely come back, and because what a cool storyline that would be as well, right? You come back, it's a shot in the arm for the Nats. You get this guy. I mean, just yeah, don't count him out.
Let me NL Rookie of the Year. We sort of touched on it. It's going to be Pete Alonso. We know that. Good job.
Yeah, Jared. It is.
Praise to Jared. I do want to note that's one.
It's bullshit.
I want to note one thing about a guy who is probably, again, not going to win the award, but has been like insanely good. Mike Soroka's road ERA is 1.32 this season. It would be the best road ERA by anyone in baseball, minimum 10 road starts, so not even that high of a threshold, since Roger Clemens in 2005, and the best by an NL pitcher since Greg Maddux in 1995.
See, that's why like I'm just not here for the whiny complaints of actual players in the league, like talking about the juice balls, is because you're talking about Soroka's road numbers. You're looking at Hyunjin Ryu's entire season. If you're good, you're still going to find a way to get out. So that's why, I mean, the juice balls, those are for the fans. When we're sitting here talking about Aaron Judge turning on a fastball and putting it fucking 580 rows back, that's what gets the fan interest going. If you're saying it gives you a competitive or gives the hitters a competitive advantage, yeah, a little bit, but I mean, there are guys who are still having great success in this league, like dominant historical success as a pitcher. So stop bitching and try and figure out what the fuck they're doing correctly so that you're not giving up these 580 foot home runs.
It's not that easy, bud. It's not that easy. You have changed the way the game is being recorded with this baseball. And you're going to have outlier sort of performances in any scenario, whether you put a carburetor on the baseball, like it seems like we've done now, or you put an anvil in the motherfucker. There's still going to be guys who just crush the ball at a ridiculous rate in regard or in respect to maybe some of the rest of the folks. Look, I've said this about the baseball, and we don't need to get heavily into this, but you think about the guys that have been questioned as far as did they take PEDs and placing asterisks next to their performances. You you fuck around with the actual ball that everybody is playing with, because guys don't have the choice of not playing with this baseball. Everything that they're doing, this entire era should have an asterisk on it, not just for one individual, because these numbers, like, you're just, you've never seen this type of offensive production in the game. That's just, those are the facts. Those are the numbers. So I appreciate outlier performances that kind of fly in the face of everything that has been the baseball, but the baseball is very real. Very, very, there's guys that are getting blisters every day. You talk to these guys every day. There's no denying it.
AL Rookie of the Year. Are we all in agreement that Yordan Alvarez has officially locked that bad boy in?
Yes, he has.
I was looking, obviously he's got a limited sample, but I was looking at adjusted OPS by rookies in like 200 plate appearances or more. And his season is eerily similar to the age 21, 1959 debut of one Willie McCovey.
Ooh.
They basically have the almost identical slash lines. Alvarez is going to end up with like 150 more plate appearances, but obviously incredibly impressive. All right. So that was a good revisit.
Yeah.
Some things still yet to be decided.
Yeah. I would say the most interesting being that National League Cy Young Award.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the most up for grabs award.
Agree. Although I think AL Cy Young, NL Cy Young, and even NL MVP too. I don't think those are, I still think the Yelich Bellinger back and forth is compelling.
Yeah, those are tight races. I mean, I think those conversations are pretty limited, but that's what's interesting is they are fairly limited.
Yeah.
They're not, it's not an expansive pool of individuals.
Well, I think it's a more compelling thing when it's two guys going back and forth that you can really zero in on, rather than a morass of eight candidates that are all really like that. To me, is not a super compelling race. I want to see two guys going back and forth, Sosa McGuire style, baby. Somebody tell us about CB Distillery.
I would love to. I would love to do that. Because you want to know why? Because I'm a huge CBD fan.
Oh.
If you've got health concerns, you need to see what CBD can do for you. CBD may offer many of the health benefits of marijuana, but without the high. CBD is 100% legal and requires no prescription when you shop at CBDistillery.com. I'm an even bigger fan of CBDistillery.com. And here's what customers have had to say about it. 5 stars. I highly recommend CBD to everyone. It's done a complete turnaround for me. Or this one. Excellent product. Makes a big difference in my health. And this note, quote, I will never do without CBD. It worked 100% for me. I'll even go as far as to saying that I am a personal CBD user. I've got the gummies at my apartment. It's perfect for anxiety when I need to wind down at the end of the night. The bottom line is that if you haven't tried CBD for whatever your health concerns are or for long-term wellness, you need to check it out. Where you get CBD products is crucial. I rely on CBDistillery.com for their quality control, independent lab tests, and nearly 250,000 customers. If you've got health concerns, you owe it to yourself to see what CBD can do for you. Go to CBDDistillery.com. Enter STARTING9 for 20% off. Again, that is promo code STARTING9 for 20% off at CBDistillery.com. CBDistillery.com. It is time to show some love. And let's see, who do we start with this week? Dallas, are you feeling lovey this week? You feeling the love this week, yeah. Nealis?
Yeah, I've got to go, I'm going to go two places. One, the youngster from Minnesota, Luis Arraez. Is that how you say his name? Arraez. Is it? Decent month of August thus far, hitting over 300, OBP 359, slugging 423. This is a dude who has shown tremendous bat to ball skill for the Minnesota Twins. Kind of a sneaky one of these guys. I don't know how much you factored Arias into the plans or how big of a part you thought he was going to be for the Minnesota Twins. You want to talk about a nice surprise? You want to talk about you got to love it, Arias? You got to fucking love it, because it's not only he's flexible as well. You could play him in the infield, play a little outfield. Swiss Army knife of sorts. Another guy I want to talk about, and I won't get too far into the woods on this, Mark Canna, guy who has gotten everyday opportunities against right-handed pitching for the first time, has 14 homers against right-handers of the 19 that he's hit. And this is a guy who was typically a left-handed platoon guy. With Ramon Laureano out, he's been playing a lot of center field, can play first base as well. So along the same vein as Arias, flexibility for the skipper. So those are the two guys. I mean, the season line right now on Arias, 341, 408 OBP, 445 slug, with an OPS plus of 128. So that's who my heart beats for.
Beautiful.
It is beautiful. Jay Hay, do you have some love that you would like to give this week?
Oh, I'm going to spread it real thick all around. Okay. I'm all over the place, but I'm going to try and keep it rapid fire. JT Realmuto, I feel like the story on him has been that he's been a little underwhelming this year as part of a generally underwhelming Phillies team. Per Fangraphs, he has been one of the 10 best position players in the entire NL this season. He's been worth 4.5 wins above replacement, slashing 275, 326, 476, which perhaps modest in today's offensively juiced game, but the threshold at catcher is insanely low at the moment. Ivan Nova looked like he might be a DFA candidate going back not too long ago. Over his last six starts, he is 5-0 with a 0.85 ERA. And across 42 and a third innings, he's doing it a little differently. He's only got 19 strikeouts.
That's wild. Tasty.
Yeah. And guy who goes today, Ryan Yarbrough.
Yeah. Go get a lefty.
Yeah, of the Tampa Bay Rays. He's been a reliever, starter, opener, relief. I mean, he's been all over the place. Over his last 11 appearances, he is 6-0 with a 1.43 ERA and a 54-4 strikeout to walk ratio.
The lefties.
He's basically like the new Blake Snell, you know?
Slicing a dice.
Ryan Yarbrough, obviously. And then. I don't really have any sexy stats for this guy, but, you know, sometimes love can be simple. And I want to give a shout out to Michael Brantley, who's hitting 334 to lead the league. He's slashing 334, 393, 540. His 932 OPS is 100 points higher than it was with the Indians last year and would be 42 points above his previous career high, which was set in 2014. With the Indians as well. I've already talked about how the Indians' unforgivable decision to not tender him a qualifying offer, but we hadn't talked about it in a little bit. The Astros never relent. And we were talking about that earlier. Springer, Alvarez, Altuve, Correa, Bregman. Michael Brantley's also on this fucking team. And he's hitting 334.
Doesn't he lead the league in multi-hit games or something like that?
Probably with let's look it up real fast. I mean, shit.
He's got to be close on the list. And he's got a nice little hit streak going too, I think, doesn't he? I don't
know. Jared.
Yes.
Oh yeah, there's the answer. Michael Brantley, 51 multi-hit games this year. Ketel Marte and Rafael Devers are next at 50 apiece. Jared, who are you giving love to today?
I am giving love to Sonny Gray.
Oh.
Sonny Gray in the month of August is 3-0. The Reds are 4-0 in his four starts. He leads the majors with an 0.38 ERA. He struck out 34 batters in 24 innings. Opponents have a 198 slug against him over that span, hitting 136. He's allowed just one homer. He's allowed just one earned run. He's allowed 11 hits in those 24 innings. It has been, well, the 14 walks, not ideal, but leads the majors with an 0.38 ERA. I'm also going to show some love to Josh Donaldson.
Did people you've been gargling the Rainmaker.
Yeah, I fucking love him. I really do. I always have.
Gargling the Rainmaker.
I always have been a fan, even more so now. Since July 7th, he's hitting 311 with a 1081 OPS. That 1081 OPS ranks 7th in the big leagues. He's right there with Yordan Alvarez, a 1088 OPS. Soler, Gurriel, Trout, Urshela, Nelson Cruz. Those are the only guys that have a higher OPS than Josh Donaldson since July 7th. So this is a guy that he's got 12 homers, 9 doubles in those 38 games. But this is a guy that came in on a one-year deal, and he there was no pomp and circumstance. There was none of that. But he was a guy that the Braves, it was a necessary piece. I think that he's injected a life into them that they lacked in the second half of last year. There's really been no major lull for the Atlanta Braves. Not that I'm going to credit all that entirely to Josh Donaldson, but having a veteran like that in the fold, it helps. It helps a lot.
Love it. That was a meaty. Show him some love.
Girthy.
Final thoughts.
The Red Sox had a scheduled walk off win today against the Kansas City Royals. What a waste of time that was. It was a suspended game, and they made, I'm sure, the wags, the wives and girlfriends of the Red Sox, they were probably not happy about this because they missed out on an entire off day in San Diego just to play the Kansas City Royals for 45. Not even. I think it was like 20 minutes. Took 20 minutes to walk off the Royals and send them back to Kansas City. So, yeah, what a waste of time that was.
Gotta love the schedule makers.
Well, it's a suspended game. They played baseball at Fenway Park for 20 minutes today.
Oh no, we got one of those coming up against the Detroit Tigers. Mike Fiers could actually, like if he's scheduled to start that day, he could actually end up winning two ball games in one day.
Love that.
Gotta love it.
Love that. Jay.
I'm just excited for all the interviews we've got lined up that you guys have worked hard to set up.
And oh, yeah.
I think there's a lot of cool stuff coming down the pipe.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, something to look out for. We've actually locked in David Cone. We will be sitting down. Ooh. I will be sitting down with David Cone when I get to New York next week. That will happen. Also, going to be sitting down with an individual who I actually had the opportunity to stop and talk to him and share a story that it was pretty cool because he was like, oh my God. CC Sabathia, a guy who was very impactful on my career in a way that, I mean, really not a whole lot in the vein of actually playing baseball, but in how to kind of go about things outside of the game of baseball. So I'll be sitting down with CeCe as well when I get to New York next week. So stay tuned for those two interviews. One, David Cone and CeCe Sabathia.
Ooh.
Love it. Jared, have a fun trip.
Oh, I will. It'll be delightful. We shall see. I think I'm going to be sitting down with Kirby Yates, with the Padres. And I don't know. We'll see what else we can finagle out there.
Until Tuesday.
Meow.